talking about bank BA as an investment. Now, the bankers or financial institutions basically can trade this bank acceptance in a secondary market before it reaches the maturity. So sometimes it is sold on face value. It can be also sold at a discount, determining on the length or the time before the maturity date. Also, the bankers' acceptance is considered to be a relatively safe investment because the bank and the borrower are liable for the amount that is due to the instrument as and when the instrument will mature. Now, moving from bank acceptance, we talk about factoring. Now, what is factoring? Factoring is an arrangement in which the receivables arising out of a sales of a goods and services to the debtor or also the customer by the business concern are purchased by or sold by a financial institution or a bank, referred as a factor. So there are, if you see, there are three parties. The financial institution or the banker who buys this is called a factor. There's a debtor who basically also referred as a customer who's basically selling this particular instrument. Now, as a result of factoring, the title of the goods represented by the said received passes on to the factor in consideration to the aid of advance to the seller. So over here, the ownership will change automatically once the factor has purchased that particular transaction. Now, understanding the process, there are various steps which are followed in a factoring process. First, the client or the seller sells his products or services to the end customer or the importer and issues an invoice for the value of the goods and services. Now, a copy of the invoice along and a cover sheet is submitted to the factor for approval because his approval will be necessary. Now, the factor responsibility now is he will try to collect the credit history and the financial information of the buyer or the end customer, and he will do a credit assessment of that particular buyer. Then the factor will makes a decision on the individual buyer's credit based on each buyer's financial information and other relevant data that he receives. So he can use also other agencies to collect this particular kind of data. The factor will now inform the client of the guarantee decision and issues a guaranteed number to each purchase order that he's going to purchase. The client delivers the goods to the buyer, which is the importer. The factor deposits the cash or the advance, whichever. Normally, it ranges from around 70% to 80% of the invoice value. It can also be 90% in some of the cases, but normally it is around 70 to 80% is deposited as advance in the client's account, bank account via an electronic deposit. Now, this is the first of the two payments the client will receive when factoring in an invoice. So the first payment will be the 70 or the 80%, and the balance payment will be received later. Now, the client sends a factor an assignment of account along with the copies of the invoice and the delivery documents to the factor. The client sends the invoice to the buyer, which is the actual importer. The invoice should have instructions informing that the buyer to pay to the factor on the due date. So now over here, the payment will not be made by the buyer importer to the exporter, but it will be made to the factor. Next step, the buyer pays the factor for the invoice around the due date. So on the particular due date, the buyer will make the payment not to the exporter directly, but to the factor. Now, when the full amount is received, the factor withholds a small factoring fee, and he will give the balance amount back again to the exporter or the client. This reserve is basically the second payment which we spoke about. The first payment was the 70 to 80% amount, and this is the second payment which the client will receive from the factor for the invoice. So this is the 10-step method for which are used for a factoring. Now, in the whole process, if you see, the factor performs some of the functions which are collection facility of accounts receivable. So it is basically acting as a collector of funds, sales ledger administration, so it also acts as an administrator, a credit protection. He also gives a short term funding to the exporter or the, okay, or to the client, as in we saw the terms used. So it gives a short term funding to the exporter, and it also acts as an advisory service to the exporter. Now here are some of the different forms of factoring. We have recourse factoring, non-recourse factoring, maturity factoring, advance factoring, full factoring, bank participation factoring, disclosure, disclosed and undisclosed factoring, and invoice discounting. Now if I have to just brief you about what this all means about, is recourse basically is recourse on the exporter. So if the importer doesn't pay, the recourse is on the exporter. Non-recourse is where the exporter is not responsible. So this would be one of the few important ones. Maturity factoring will be payment is made on the maturity date. Advance factoring is when advance is given for the particular factoring before the shipment is made. Full factoring means factoring is done for the full amount, entire amount. Bank participation would be when a bank also is involved in the whole factoring process. Disclosed and undisclosed factoring would be when the factoring is already disclosed to the end importer, is called disclosed. If it is not disclosed, then it is undisclosed factoring. And there is another option, which is invoice discounting, which is done. Now from factoring to forfeiting. Now the word forfeiting also basically would imply means to forfeit, in which the exporter forfeits his right to export receivables. He forfeits his right to receive payment for the export receivables. Now it is a trade finance option. This is extended by a forfeiter to an exporter or a seller of goods for a sales transaction which involves a deferred payment transaction. Deferred payment basically means a long-term transaction, long-term payment transaction. Okay, so a deferred payment transaction over a long period of time at a firm rate of discount. So definitely the forfeiting agency is going to charge you some sort of interest amount, which is also can be considered as a discount on the whole amount. Now forfeiting is generally extended to the exports of capital goods, commodities and services where the importer insists on supply of credit terms. Now if the importer is not asking for credit terms, then a forfeiting is not required. Secondly, we are talking about capital goods where the investment or where the invoice value would be huge, and it will be, and the credit term will be also for a longer time. So if it is a deferred payment which is involving payment terms of more than 1 year, 2 years, up to 5 years or even 10 years, then forfeiting can be used as a finance option. Now there are basically these five parties in the transaction which are forfeiting, which is one, the exporter, who is the exporter of the goods, the importer who is going to actually import the goods, the forfeiting, the exporter's bank or the bank with whom the exporter is regularly having transaction or is maintaining his account with, the importer's bank, the bank of the importer where he maintains his account, and a forfeiting agency or commonly known as the forfeiter. Now a forfeiter can be an individual or it can be an entity who purchases the receivables. So there are various agencies existing in the world who are involved in active forfeiting. Now the importer then pays the amount of the receivable to the forfeiter, because the exporter has given away or forfeited his right to receive payment from the importer. So the importer has to pay the forfeiter. The forfeiter is typically a bank or a financial firm that specializes in export financing. So in this whole process, the forfeiter assumes the following risk that may arise from in making the guarantee. most important economic risk related to the insolvency of the debtor or his guarantor. So he's taking the risk of the economic risk of insolvency. So if the buyer later date is insolvent, he's actually taking that sort of risk. If he gets insolvent, he will not receive his payment. Country risk comprises of political risk, which particularly includes the conversion and the transfer risk. So if a country goes at war, or if the country has some civil disturbance, then the forfeiting agency stands at risk to lose the money. The exchange rate fluctuations or exchange risk, the risk associated to an exchange rate. Now currently, if you see the last trend of exchange rate between the USD and the INR, you will see there has been the rupee has depreciated in value against the major currencies. In this example, what I am talking is the USD. So currently it prevails at around 76 rupees for a USD. So forfeiting the forfeiter will also assume the risk of collection risk, which is the loss of the receivables in the post the enforceability of the receivables. He also possesses interest risk, because the risk of interest rate fluctuations during the credit period is also huge, because we are talking about long-term payments which are ranging for more than 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, or even 10 years. Transfer risk, the risk of an inability to convert local currency into the currency in which the debt is denominated, because there can be some countries who suffer an acute problem of foreign currency. If they don't have foreign currency with them, then the conversion may not take place in locally. Now in forfeiting, the forfeiter will purchase the receivables, which expedites the payment and the cash flow of the exporter. So basically the exporter does not have to struggle with the cash flow. The importer's bank typically will guarantee the amount, because they are the ones who are going to take the money from the importer and give it to the forfeiting agency. This purchase will also eliminate the credit risk involved, because this will be a credit transaction, but it eliminates the credit risk involved in the credit sale to an importer. Also, it facilitates the importer in a big way, because most of the importer cannot afford to pay the full amount in full for the delivery or upon the delivery of the goods or payment in advance. So they need time to pay or collect the money and pay to the exporter for the transaction. Now, some of the merits of a forfeiting transaction is, one, forfeiting eliminates the risk that the exporter will receive payment. The exporter doesn't have to worry now, because normally forfeiting is a without recourse option, which means that in case the importer tomorrow fails to pay, the exporter cannot be held liable for it. So normally forfeiting is a without recourse payment method, so it is definitely beneficial to the exporter. So all risks associated with non-receipt of payment are negated or eliminated for the exporter. Forfeiting is flexible, because the forfeiting agency can help you with a lot of things. There's an easy documentation which is to be followed. The charges are transparent. There's no hidden charges. Charges are given upfront, and so on. Forfeiting is helpful in situation where the country or a specific bank within the country does not have access to an export credit agency. Now, export credit agencies are those agencies who actually ensure the credit risk associated in a transaction. Now, if in a country there is no agency, or the bank does not have any credit risk agency in hand, so forfeiting agency for doing a transaction on forfeiting will definitely benefit, because again, as I said, forfeiting is a without recourse transaction, and also it will negate, there will be no payment risk involved in this. Some of the demerits: it is generally an expensive method. then commercial lending, financial lendings to because this will be at a higher cost. The cost really because most of the transaction will find it will be in a percentage to the particular transaction, and ranging from a discounting fee from around 2% to around 7%. So it is an expensive transaction overall. Now, forfeiting is not done, or forfeiting, or the forfeiter will not accept a transaction which is less than $100,000. If there's a smaller amount, then there are other options which are available for financing. But a forfeiting agency or a forfeiter will accept a transaction which is of a larger denomination, range which is more than $100,000, and it will also have a should have a long-term maturity. Only then a forfeiter accepts a particular transaction. Forfeiting is also forfeiting is available actually for a deferred payment method. So forfeiting can act as a very good source of financing. Continuing with the demerits, now there could be a discrimination observed as only selected currencies are taken for forfeiting because they have international liquidity. Like major currencies are normally used for forfeiting. So all world major currencies only can be used. If there is a transaction which is not in this major currencies, it may sometimes be rejected for the from forfeiting. Lastly, there is no international credit agency that can provide guarantee for forfeiting companies. This is one of the demerits because normally an agency a forfeiter will also like to cover himself for against loss, but there is no such agency which exists which can cover a forfeiting company or a forfeiting or a forfeiter. So this is one of the other drawback for forfeiting. Now moving from the financing options, we are talking about supporting institutional framework or supporting institutions which are available in India, in the Indian context, to exporters and importers for various financing options. So these are some of the financing options for, available to the Indian exporter or importer. Pre-shipment finance, or also known as packing credit. Now what happens in this? This is normally backed by a confirmed order or a letter of credit. Now if the exporter has any of these two, he can approach his bank and he can approach pre-shipment finance or packing credit. Now what is pre-shipment finance? It is the finance which is given to an exporter after he receives the order till the time he actually ships the good is a pre-shipment finance, something which is given in between. Now the main idea of pre-shipment finance, as I said, it is packing credit. It is for helping the exporter for procurement of goods, raw material, packing material, paying for the labor, paying for the shipping cost and shipping the goods out. Then we have post-shipment option or post-shipment finance. Now this is when goods are shipped to the consumer and the payment is assured. Like for example, when the goods are manufactured and the shipment is done, on the basis of the shipping document, the exporter can receive the post-shipment finance. Now, as the word suggests, it is post-shipment, which is after the shipment is gone. This kind of finance option is available to the exporter. Now there are various forms of finance options even in this pre-shipment and post-shipment, in various methods are available which vary from different bank, which can be easily understood from the bank perspective. Then there is import finance, which is a short-term finance linked with your trading cycle. Now so this also can be availed because normally import requires a short-term finance options to complete the whole production cycle or the full trading cycle. Now here are some of the agencies whom you can talk to, or government agencies you can talk to. We have the Ministry of Commerce or the MOC, or under this we also have the DGFT or the Director General of Foreign Trade. Then we have the state industry departments, various departments in the state. We have customs and excise, which now we also call as central tax. We have export inspection agency, which also facilitates a lot of trade. We have export credit guarantee corporation, or ECGC in short, which facilitates your credit insurance. We have Reserve Bank of India, definitely, who is the banker of bankers, and we have Exim Bank, who also, with a specific purpose for financing export and import. And we have the various export promotion councils, which is again sponsored through the MOC or Ministry of Commerce. Now let's understand about something about Exim Bank. Now Exim Bank is a premier financial institution. It is a wholesale banker by nature, because it provides a lot of finance related to export and import to other commercial banks. So it can be classified as a wholesale bank. Now it started its operation in 1982. Now this is a bank by law. There was a Parliament Act, which is the Exim Bank Act, which was passed, through which this bank was formed. It acts as a catalyst and a key player in promotion of cross-border trade and investments. It plays a major role in partnering with MSMEs through its wide range of products and services. Now here are some of the flagship programs which Exim Bank conducts. It is Overseas Investment Finance, LOC or Lines of Credit, Corporate Banking, Buyer's Credit under the National Export Insurance Account, and Project Export. It finances a lot of project exports. Now just to give you a brief about this, after which I will tell you to concentrate more on the Lines of Credit. Now, overseas investment finance is basically finance given for those Indian companies who want to venture abroad. Now, lines of credit is very important because it is a finance given to a financial institution or a government agency or a semi-government agency or a state body in the importer's country which wants to import product from India. The Exim Bank will notify such lines of credit through various newspapers and news which is sent, which is on their website also. They will give you a lot of notification. Now this lines of credit will be for a specific product. Normally the amount is also fixed, that they are particularly financing this much amount for a particular product or a particular industry, and it also has an expiry date. Like the lines of credit will not be indefinitely open, they will be for a 2 years period or 3 years period. So you need to keep a tab of this, because this will help you to understand which countries you can focus on, and if there's any line of credit extended for your line of product, so you can target those particular countries where you can start exporting more. Then talking about export promotion councils, as the word suggests, it is an export promotion council with the main intention to promote export. Now they also provide guidance. Basically the role is to provide guidance, assistance to exporters. They are basically act as an advisory services which they are provided to an exporter. Now membership to this export promotion council, you need to pay some membership fee. So normally the export promotion council will issue you a RCMC, which is a registration cum membership certificate, for which we need to pay certain registration fee and a annually renewed membership fee. Now, in legal terms, this export promotion councils are basically a non-profit organizations, normally registered as a company or a society. The main primarily purpose is to basically promote export in that particular, for which particular line of product or a group of product they are made for. So basically, if I give you an example, if I'm talking about pharma products, if government wants to promote pharma products, then there is a agency, there is an export promotion council by the name of Pharmaxil, who is responsible for promotion and development of pharma industry. If I talk about chemical, then there is some agency called Chemixil, and so on. If you talk about spices, then there is a spice board which exists. So all these are regulated under the administrative control of the Department of Commerce. Now Here are some of the functions which the expert promotion councils are supposed to do. Now, they do much more than this, but then these are some of the things for your guidance. It's providing information on various markets, or providing information on various, even sometimes they have information on various buyers. They provide you assistance in your exports, in providing you help on documentation and other related matters. They collect a lot of data, and all this data is also used. They also collect data from you as because you will also be submitting them returns, which is quarterly returns or yearly returns, which also they will tabulate and understand that how this particular sector is doing overall. They act as an liaison. They send trade delegations and they also participate in various trade fairs abroad. So there are a lot of trade fairs who happen, and then they represent the whole group or the whole industry as a whole over there. And you can also they give you various options to participate, like you can have your brochures put in on the stall and so on and so on and so forth. So you can approach them and they'll give you a list of things where you can do. They send trade delegations to various countries where they meet the similar importers or similar trade associations in that particular country and discuss more trade. They can assist you in opening offices abroad. And most important part is they are the main role is to motivate the exporter to export more in that particular product. Some more functions: cooperation with EIC, which is the Export Inspection Council, disposing of applications, offering guidance to exporters on various products and various markets, indicating exports opportunities. If they find any export opportunity, they immediately convey to the members. Settling of disputes. If any dispute arises between the exporter and the importer, they can be used as a medium to sort disputes. Solving transport related problems and issuing certificate of origin. Now, a certificate of origin is basically a document which certifies the origin of a particular country. Now, export promotion councils are in charge of issuing non-preferential certificate of origins. So if we saw in this whole chapter of the various agencies, of the various supports, various financial institutions, now there is much more outside which we couldn't fit in this chapter, but then it is really advisable for you to please seek more information on this chapter, because this is a wide topic to understand and everything cannot be concised in this particular small book chapter or this small all this lecture. So take some initiative also to read more, understand more. Thank you and all the best.